CliffCentral.com. Hey, it's September 11th. Happy September 11th, everybody. Can you say that?
Yeah, I was about to ask.
I don't think anyone's ever really happy about it.
You say, hey, happy September 11th. Is that too enthusiastic? Does that sound like I support terror?
What, 17 years ago?
17 years ago.
Wow. Doesn't feel 17 years ago. That's incredible. It's changed the world, and it's 17 years ago?
It was 2001, right?
Yeah.
I was in
almost half my life. That.
Wow, that's something to think about. All right, it's just after 7 o'clock, cliffcentral.com. We're going to take your calls. Nolo's busy with those. You can call us on 0861-555-189. If you want to get hold of us on Skype, it's cliffcentral, one word. See how easy it is to get hold of us? That is how easy it is to get hold of us. All right, let's go to Bradley on 96, shall we? Hey, Bradley, what's up, dude?
Hey, guys, what's happening, man?
Yeah, all good, man. What can you tell me?
Sorry, excuse the voice. I got a bit of a cold, man. I'm listening last for a change, so that's exciting.
Very nice. Don't worry about your voice. I didn't know how it sounded without a cold, so...
Fair enough. Right. Hey, I want to talk to Ben, man.
Hold on, let me put you through to Ben. Just hang on a second. What's Ben's extensions here?
743.
Yeah, and then I said, hi, hello.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Bradley.
Definitely.
I'm okay.
Dude, I went to Cape Town last week, Thursday, for a couple of meetings, and I met Brendan Philander.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, man. Geez, you know when they say never meet your heroes, because they're always a disappointment?
That's pretty much...
totally proves that wrong, man.
Does he? I heard he's really good at golf and he's a nice guy, but I do still stand by the thing of never meet your heroes. Did you guys chat?
He's very cool. He's really, really cool. Turns out he's a close friend of one of the girls I worked with, and he kind of pitched up. He had dinner with us. He partied with us. He spent most of the night. He left well after 12. Jeez, man, he's just so nice. He talks about his friends, his family, his dogs. He's just so chill there. So, yeah, really, really cool guy.
And did he talk about sport a lot?
No, not really, eh?
He's more talking about
his baby on the way, his injury that he's nearly recovered from, thank God. Thank you, need him.
No, Bradley, look, by and large, our sports stars in this country are actually decent people from what I gather.
You know what's interesting is a lot of these guys are way, way cooler and way nicer to talk to when the camera isn't on them.
Yeah.
The minute you turn a camera on, they've been through such media training because, you know, they say dopey things. And then because they're sports people, they're expected to be role models and people, you know, they don't treat them like humans. So they're actually much nicer in person. And this is in my very limited experience around sports people. The minute you turn on a camera, they become very boring, instantly boring. They get that super sport glazed look on their face like a sheep in the headlights.
Yeah, and they start speaking differently. But Brad, what I'd always suggest is keep the bar low with sports people. Rather, always be a surprise when they're good people than otherwise. Mm. Because the moment you start thinking everyone's like Vernon, you might meet a dick or two. But generally, our sports stars are top stars. They generally are pretty decent people.
Yeah. Well, you're no better than me. You've had more exposure to them than I have. But yeah, man, I just thought I'd share that with you.
Nice. Very nice. Thank you, Bradley.
Cool, man. All right, have a good day.
You too. Right, you too, Bradley. Bye-bye. There we go. You can get hold of us like Bradley did, 0861-555-189. Put it in your phone. You never know when you might need to call us and rant and rave or talk about something interesting that's happened. Tell us you met some sports star, you know. People have got good stories. Can I just start with something that I found the other day and we never got to? There's this comedian, we talked about New Zealand earlier, and there's a comedian in Australia who has done something very, very different. I always applaud people who are original and come up with new ideas, and her name is Hannah Gadsby. She's a comedian from Tasmania in Australia. She's also a lesbian, and she has done a lot of jokes over the years about, you know, being a lesbian and looking like a man and so on. And I don't think she looks that much like a man. I mean, I've seen a lot of girls who kind of dress like guys, and you can still see they're girls, and she's one of those. Not that that matters at all. She makes fun of it herself, so it's quite, you know, it's quite useful to her as a comedy tool. But she spectacularly quit comedy live on stage during her Netflix special. She said, I've had enough of this. It is demeaning. I'm not going to do it anymore.
Comedy is demeaning or just being in Tasmania? Oh.
Well, listen to this. I mean, this is a synopsis. There's some irritating piano music in the background because they like to make it, you know, this is how you get dumb people to emote. You play piano music in the background. But here she is doing her thing, and she starts off telling jokes, which is what the audience paid for. And then halfway through, she starts, you know, really getting into the deep, down, dirty, dark stuff. And she says, you know, she was raped when she was younger. And it turns very quickly from a comedy show into I don't know what you would call it.
But more than the audience, this is what Netflix paid you for.
Yeah.
This is quite a way to go out.
I mean, it's different. You got to give credit where it's due. If they wanted to do something different, that's what they got. If I saved up for a couple of weeks to go to a comedy show and this happened, don't know if I'd be so thrilled, but you listen, you decide. So listen to this.
I don't feel comfortable in a small town. I get a bit tense, mainly because I'm this situation. And in a small town, that's all right from a distance. People are like, oh, good bloke. I love being mistaken for a man. I wouldn't want to be a straight white man, not if you paid me, although the pay would be substantially better.
I mean, she's funny, right?
I do think I have to quit comedy, though. And it's probably not the forum to make such an announcement, is it? I have built a career out of self-deprecating humour, and I simply will not do that anymore, not to myself or anybody who identifies with me. Do you understand what self-deprecation means? It's not humility, it's humiliation.
Uh-oh. And suddenly we've crossed the line. And at this point, she really does get very heavy.
Self-deprecation is not humility.
It's humiliation. Now, I profoundly disagree with that. As someone who loves self-deprecating humor, I use it all the time. I often talk about my own failings, misgivings, insecurities. It's part of how you connect with people. It's not humiliation at all. And I don't know where she's going with this. I don't know what kind of a career she's going to have any time after this. Of course, it's brave, but then, you know, going to war is brave. And giving up your job is brave. In that respect, she's given up her job because she's never going to work in comedy again. She's not funny anymore. After this, she becomes very serious. And I just wondered about whether or not this isn't apex attention-seeking, an apex virtue signaling. This is the ultimate, the peak, the zenith of let me share my story, which you didn't pay to come in. You came to laugh, and now I'm going to bore you to death with my horrible story, which is what she does from there on, and it really does get very heavy. So part of me says this is brave, it's different, it's fresh, it's unique, and what a story. She grew up in Tasmania, she had this very difficult childhood, she had abuse of men in her life. It's a horrible story, but I'm not there for a TED talk. It's comedy. So the other part of me is going, this is completely inappropriate. And you cannot foist this stuff on an audience that have come to laugh. You know, if you go for a serious lecture on LGBTIQA, however many letters there are now, issues, that's a separate thing from going to a comedy show. If I book to see, you know, Dave Levinson. I pitch up there and Dave Levinson starts off on some rant about, you know, white people and the land, but it's not funny at all. It's like serious. And this doesn't get funny. It gets serious after this. I would be annoyed. I'd be like, hang on, this is not what I paid for. This is not what was advertised. It's like if you get a product and it doesn't cut like it says in the ad, it squashes. I wanted scissors. I wanted something to cut. Now you've given me a hammer. I don't know how this is going to go for her, and it's none of my business, because she can do what she wants with her Netflix special. A lot of people are saying it's very powerful, thought-provoking, she's destroying comedy. But who would want to destroy comedy? And that line that she uses in there bothers me a lot. So philosophically, I've got a problem with someone who's saying that all self-deprecating humor is humiliation. It's not humility. It is humility. Some of the funniest things people say are when they are the things that they can say about themselves that show some deep introspection, and they can let other people laugh at those things. That's what self-deprecating humor is. You know, you've got to be strong to do that. And you've also got to be strong to give up your whole career like she has here. So I'm very torn with this thing. I don't know what to make of it. You want to hear some more? Just let's listen to a little bit more and you can see.
I want my story heard. Because what I would have done to have heard a story like mine.
Well, fair enough. But on a Netflix comedy special?
No.
I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think comedy is one of the hardest gigs. It definitely is. I think you'll find more depression in comedians than you'll find in actors, that kind of stuff. It's a very tough gig. However, we know this, though. And like what you're saying, a lot of people are going to say it's insensitive, but it's entertainment. You get into this because this is what you get into. To then say, well, it's actually horrible that I've got to make jokes out of myself. No, that's your gig.
Yeah,
the reason why I'm not torn is because she knew about this. She knew going into it, or even if she didn't know getting into it.
Maybe Netflix knew. Maybe they wanted to experiment.
But after a while, you knew what you were doing, and you knew what the audience was resonating with, and so you could have decided ages ago that, okay, well, this is not what I want to do, and you step away.
Look.
Why on stage in front of people? I don't get it. And why do you make it sound so bitter and evil when it isn't?
I mean, this is also where we've got to with everybody wants to tell their story, but you've got to remember, some people have got to want to listen. Otherwise, it's just you mouthing off into the wilderness. And that's not exciting.
Why didn't she say this before?
Maybe she wasn't ready to deal with it. Maybe she, for whatever reason. I mean, that's none of our business.
Not even 3 years before. I'm saying before you stepped on stage. Well, right now, I left my house.
Maybe,
maybe she wanted to,
maybe she wanted to surprise the audience. That's what a showman sometimes does.
Or maybe she wanted to bag the Netflix money.
No, I think Netflix probably knew. I mean, they would have recorded this some time ago, and then they would have thought about it and decided to put it out. So I think I don't feel that Netflix is back to loser here. I don't think that at all.
At the same time, I mean, expression is a very personal thing. We never understand what the right expression is, the wrong expression. She wants to make a change in her life. Okay, if she has a one-on-one with her bestie at a bar and says, you know, I'm tired of this, I'm going to make a change. And she goes, okay, cool, Cheryl, what was that again? Because she's on her phone. She probably feels it's not the best stage. If she tells the world, then she knows she can't turn back on this. So she, it's like when someone says, I'm going to run a marathon. If you tell your dog that, you'll probably not wake up next day to go run. But if you broadcast that to your biggest possible platform, whether it be your Facebook page, whether it be here on this show, if you want to do something, you want to make, so therefore there's no going back.
Okay.
So maybe that's what her mindset towards this was. I still think it's people are getting really soft about everything. We spoke about that in the first hour. You know, like, life's fucking tough for everybody. Everybody. You tell me you're selling insurance today, it hasn't cracked up the way you wanted it to be. You're tired of calling people. You're tired of laughing at your boss's jokes. What are you going to do? Have a cry? No, you got to carry on.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Might have something to do with her.
On the grounds of what she said, I really don't get the big hoo-ha around it. You know, she's saying about comedy and how it's self-deprecating. You knew all of this. This is why I don't think it's a massive deal.
And she's Australian, so you've got to be self-deprecating.
And you actually walked onto stage as well. I think if Netflix said, hey, whatever her name is, look, here's a...
Hannah Gadsby.
A massive paycheck. We want you to do this comedy special. And in turn, she rather put out a statement saying, look, I've been offered this amazing lump sum of money to do this comedy special, but I've really been thinking about it. And to me, comedy isn't working anymore. I feel like I'm being self-deprecating and I'm not being the best version of myself.
Okay.
And this is why I've canceled. That is more.
Yeah, but maybe she had a meeting with Netflix and they decided between them, you know what? This is still powerful. And it is. A lot of people were cheering and clapping, and they, you know, it's a social comment. It's not comedy, but it's a lecture. That's what it is.
Would you have cheered if you were in the audience?
I would have been furious, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, because
I wouldn't have. I didn't come here to hear you unburden yourself. Like, I'm not that interested. And frankly, not very many people in the world are that interested in other people's suffering. They're not. It sounds cruel, and it sounds like, you know, a really unsympathetic, cold thing to say. Most people on earth are not that invested in other people's stories. They really aren't. It only matters to you if there's some part of it that reflects a part of you. That's how people are, right?
Sure.
So I would be slightly annoyed that I hadn't come to something that I thought I was coming to, that I was at a different event to the one that was promised to me. But it's got nothing to do with me because I didn't go to this show, and I'm not angry with Hannah Gadsby, and she's allowed to do whatever she wants. And I think Netflix are in on this, and that's their business too. They wanted to make an important, powerful statement. And look at it. We're talking about it, right? We're not talking about every other comedy special. We're talking about hers. So it's made an impact. And for whatever reason, good or bad, she has changed the comedy world in a big way with this. If that's what she wanted to achieve, she's certainly done it. It's not my idea of a fun night out in the town, especially when she starts talking about how she was abused by these men and things. Yeah, it's hard. That's heavy stuff.
It is.
A lot of people don't really need to hear that from everyone else.
But you're probably fine because of the early abuse. Comedy was her outlet. Comedy was her way of getting through it.
It's a therapy.
And now that she's got a position of strength where she feels she doesn't need the crutch, she's now going to say, okay, I don't need the comedy anymore because it makes me feel shit in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, life makes you feel shit.
Anyway, it's interesting, and I thought we would just reflect on it because it may have passed you by otherwise. I thought there was quite a lot to think about there. And, you know, good luck to her. I think, you know, for doing this, she is pretty brave. But it's an indication, too, of where we're at in the world. And I don't know that we want to destroy comedy, and that self-deprecating humor is a bad thing. I think we've got to hold on to a few of those things, otherwise we will end up completely humorless. There won't be anything left to laugh at.
And that will be the biggest loss in the world, actually. And unfortunately, people are hell-bent and getting humor to be dead.
But there are different types of comedies. Might not be your liking, but...
But as long as it's still comedy.
Ellen DeGeneres, she signs off a show saying, be kind to one another, and she now says she vowed to never do comedy again if it puts anyone else down. You can still be funny and not be self-deprecating. Then just...
I think a lot of jokes are at someone's expense, and that's okay. That's part of what we do as humans. It's how we rank ourselves. It's how we outrank each other. It's how we find a reason to laugh instead of be miserable, you know, for whatever reason. I don't want to go into an analysis because that, you know, when you analyze comedy, it turns out to not be so funny some of the time. And you do realize that when someone falls down the stairs and it looks ridiculous and you laugh.
No, that's funny.
Yeah, but you know that's just a gut reaction. You didn't decide they fell and now I'm going to laugh. You laugh because it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Of course it's at someone's expense. Someone could even hurt themselves pretty badly.
Well, Gareth, over the last 30 years, Jeffrey Hall from the University of Kansas has conducted 39 studies involving 15,000 people, and he's discovered that humor is a critical part of building strong relationships.
Thank you very much.
So what you'll find is that couples in particular that are self-deprecating, who do pull the piss out of each other, generally stay together longer, and are happier and healthier.
Very good.
Studies suggest that we have to have humor amongst us. This is how we actually connect. So don't you dare take away humor.
All right.
I will fight to the death for that. Oh. I won't fight to death for religion or, I don't know, will or whatever people fight for. I'll fight
wool.
For humor.
Will?
Will? All right. I got something interesting here because this is, I'm going to be very childish now and go from an important philosophical discussion into something much more ridiculous. I love it when news people screw up because, and maybe it's because I'm childish, the news people are always so serious. They're giving you the news, you know, it's a very serious news story. And they sometimes fall over their words like we all do and they say something that they don't want to say. Maybe they correct themselves, sometimes they don't, but it's funny either way for me. Here is a Canada news I think it's about the weather. And the guy, he's saying, he wants to say counties, but he says cunty.
Dry conditions and wind raising concerns in many Alberta countries and counties rather.
I do love that.
A lot of counties in Alberta.
Here's a Fox News in America. Guy's talking about Donald Trump. And instead of saying, undercuts. He says undercunts. All right, are you ready for this?
Instead of pushing back on that, President Trump seems to be applauding and cheering that move. That undercuts the policy behind sanctions.
He doesn't even stop.
Trump is always undercutting people.
He's undercutting people. So I thought that was funny, right? That's
those undercuts.
And then the best one. This is from a university graduation where they're giving out master's degrees. So they hand out the master's degrees, and the woman who's reading it out completely screws up the one master's candidate's name when she's busy reading out the names.
Earning the Master of Science, Haley Armstrong.
Yay.
Rhonda Joy Hinkle.
Yeah.
Jacqueline Jewett.
Yay.
Julie Jerkoff. Forgive me, Kirkoff. John McShane.
Julie Jerkoff. Julie, did you hear that?
Scarred for life. Everyone's going to be like, hey, Julie Jerkoff.
Oh, that poor girl. You know how many years you spent doing your master's degree, and this is what they call you, Julie Jerkoff? I've got to hear that again. All right, listen to this.
Joy Hinkle. Jacqueline Jewett. Julie Jerkoff. Forgive me, Kirkoff.
And 4 years you spent doing your master's degree, and you get called Jerkoff by the dean.
But Kirkoff would be spelled K-I-R.
Yes. No, she was thinking of a Jerkoff.
J-E-K-I. Yeah. No, that woman's mind.
I think it's the slip of the J from Julie.
Julie Jerkoff. I love it.
Julie Jerkoff.
Yeah, but see, on the alphabet, K follows J. JK is not a big stretch for anybody who speaks words.
No. I'd be mortified.
So there we go. There's some fun for you from the news.
Well, you probably find Julie, as she was called Julie Jerkoff for most of her younger years. She then got into college and was like, no one called me that. It's the best thing.
Yeah, she's like, thank God I'm through that. I got through high school with those dumb guys. Julie Jerkoff. And then I got to university, and now I'm doing my master's degree. And I'm a master of science. She's not some master of, you know,
EFF
some
studies,
humanities nonsense. She's a master of science, and she's standing there in front of everybody, and it's her proudest moment, and this dean calls her Jerkoff.
And your fiancé is there, and your science
mom and dad,
mentor who
you imagine.
Ooh, cunty.
Undercunts.
You're right. That's a good word to use now for people. I think we're going to start using that to describe various politicians.
Right, undercunts and Julie Jerkoff.
Right, exactly. Shame. Okay, a couple of things going on in the news that we need to talk about this morning. You have to wash your hands before you go through airport security.
Okay, Gareth, don't tell me twice.
No, I'll tell you why. I found this article on Fast Company yesterday. Apparently, and this really upset me, so I thought we needed to discuss it. Apparently, you know those plastic trays that you put your stuff in before it gets x-rayed?
Yep, full of bilharzia. Okay.
They have more germs than any airport toilet.
What?
They study... Of course. Listen to this. Julie Jerkoff did the study.
Oh.
That's how we know it's for real. The study was carried out by a team of experts at the University of Nottingham and the Finnish National Institute for Health and Welfare. And the Finns are terrifically clean people. During the winter of 2016... they found evidence of viruses on 10% of the surfaces tested. And apparently, at the Helsinki airport that they did the tests at, it is much cleaner than the food court at JFK or anywhere else, really. The most common virus found on the study was rhinovirus, which causes the common cold. The flu virus is also present. The highest concentration of viruses on the security check were found on plastic trays. Mm-hmm. Other virus hotspots included the payment terminals at airport shops, staircase railings, passport check counters, children's play areas, and, you know, just floating around in the air waiting to ruin your vacation. Toilets were surprisingly low on the list. perhaps because people don't tend to touch them, and they're typically cleaned more frequently than the shop's credit card machine. Now, this makes me very nervous.
Yeah, credit card machines, whoever cleans them?
Nobody.
But yet people's fingers are in them all day.
And they're putting their PIN on there after they've just wiped their nose or scratched their backside.
Definitely done both, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is going to just ruin us all.
So for someone who's a little bit nervous about other people and their germs...
But the airport is your perfect storm. You have people coming from all kinds of countries, at all different stages, all walks of life.
Oh.
Literally all walks of life. And they're all sneezing and touching and the same things.
That is so true.
It's amazing how we haven't died.
So what can you do? Well, hand washing and coughing hygiene are crucial to the control of contagious infections in public areas with high volumes of people passing through. But that's apparently too much for some people. So the rule is wash your hands. Wash them all the time. You get into the bathroom. When you arrive at the airport, wash your hands. Mm. After you've used the credit card machine, go to the bathroom, wash your hands. Before you get on the plane, go to the bathroom and wash your hands. Bathroom's actually quite clean.
Hmm. Now that I think about it, I think it is.
And they use those chemicals, by the way, to clean the toilets and the bathrooms. They don't use any chemicals in the credit card machine.
If I was a germ, I wouldn't hang out in the toilet.
Ugh.
I would go to the kids' areas. Like those ball pits and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You throw your kid in there, you might as well throw them into a pot of lava. Mm. They're coming out there not the same.
It is at least the Cape Town airport who has sanitizer dispensers just as you've gone through security.
Yeah, it's because they don't have any water for you to wash your hands. It's not because of the germs.
Oh, I thought they were caring like, about
well,
us.
If we can sanitize the hands now, they won't go to the toilet.
Oh, that's the one.
Speaking of Cape Town, Robin Scher's going to pop in just now. We'll talk about fynbos in your garden. Yes, you can grow fynbos from the daintiest little erica to our majestic national flower, the protea, because that's also a fynbos plant.
It really is majestic.
And we all want to add these to our gardens, and Robin will help us understand. I got a message yesterday. It was her birthday from Kate Turkington. You remember as a guest we've had here on the show before? No, she's 84. Oh. Kate Turkington never misses the Lifestyle show. She's a big fan of hearing what Robin has to say.
Oh, fantastic.
Isn't that nice? So we'll talk about that with Robin Scher next. Sarah's got an interesting story for us about robots that are becoming like humans. The worst part of humans, not the best part of humans.
Oh, we really surprised with this, though. I find this so funny. So this is the scene. There are scientists who are working at Cardiff University, and they're also teaming up with the folks at MIT.
Yep.
And these are computer scientists and psychologists as well. They're hard at work developing great technology for the world in terms of robots. But this is what they've now discovered. The more they do different tests with the robots, the more they group robots for different exercises, etc., etc., they've now been able to spot that this is, by the way, in between thousands of simulations on robot brains, that there are certain robots who now will split off into different groups.
Uh-oh.
Based on how they identify each other.
Uh-oh.
And based on those characteristics, they'll say, that group over there, they really aren't cutting it. So let's just totally.
In other words, robots are racist? Is that what we're saying? Who did this study? Julie Jerkoff?
Julie Jerkoff.
Yes.
Well, for now, we can just say robots have the ability to now have some level of prejudice.
Wow.
Are we really surprised, though? Are we really surprised? They are also able to now copy and learn behaviors from each other, too. This is beyond what they're programmed to do. So this is a study that was published by these computer scientists and psychologists at the university. They showed that some of the robots actually, who are virtually simulated, are able to shun others, and they form their own groups. And they also are able to get to a level where they have a give and take system, so they're able to manipulate other robots in for their own benefit. So they know, okay, well, let me just appease this Ben robot for a while, and I know that he'll be able to help me out with a certain other number of
things. In other words, they're manipulating like humans do.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you allow artificial intelligence to run. Maybe this is a natural law. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But maybe it's the natural law. Maybe humans, when they're being identity obsessed, when they form themselves into little groups, and we know this happens, it's happened throughout history, and they shun members of other groups, which is technically racism. Maybe that's the natural law. I don't like it at all. It goes against everything we believe. I do. I'm not going to speak on your behalf, but maybe robots who are not engineered with this in mind, they try not to make robots racist, but they still end up being tribal.
Yeah, the professor's really panicking at this point. He says, such widespread prejudice is hard to reverse.
Well, there you see.
But I don't see it necessarily as a negative. I really do think it's that thing of survival. Like, what do I have to benefit from you? And if you are just, you are fascinated by the color of the wall, meanwhile we're trying to save humanity. Well, actually, let me shun you. Let me work with people who want to progress and develop, and that's who I'll deal with.
It's kind of, it's a bit disappointing,
it's
to say the least.
I'm not really surprised. I think it's fascinating.
It's in everything that happens in this world.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan had Elon Musk on his podcast this last week.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, like, basically, we are so screwed. The robots are essentially going to kill us. And Musk was even lobbying, like, governors to say, we've got to hold back on the AI. We've got to chill out on the stuff because we're not going to be able to put the genie back in the bottle kind of thing. And the way he spoke about this was like, well, we're fucked. Basically, not as many words. That's what he said.
Yeah. Tembi's just sent me a message to say, I have an interview for a job at a radio station this afternoon. Any tips? I have no previous experience or qualifications. Well, that's perfect for radio.
Go in there like you don't need the job, because they're going to have a whole bunch of idiots coming in there saying, I always wanted to work on radio. It's my favorite thing. Blah, 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 blah. You just say, look, I can communicate. I understand life. I'm punctual.
Well, I don't even know. You know, people in radio management tend to be very low-functioning people. Yeah. So I don't know how you can impress them. Maybe if you don't shit your pants, that's a good start.
Yeah.
Is that where the standard is?
Just be on time. If you don't get a job, it actually might be a compliment. You're probably too smart.
But Tembi, good luck.
Otherwise, good luck, yeah. Wish you the best.
Yeah, Tembi, have fun. Knock it for six. You want to work in radio? The first question should be, are you mentally ill?
Yeah.
Do you want to be here in radio? I remember when I went for my first interview. It wasn't even really an interview. It was like a meeting. In fact, I did have, hang on. We had an audition.
Okay.
When I was on campus radio. And there was this board of people. There were like three or four people at a table. And I sat on the other end of the table. It was very intimidating. And they said, oh, so you want to be on radio? So I said, I want to do something between lectures to kill time.
Ooh.
And I thought this would be fun. So they said, well, what can you do? Entertain us! Which is the worst thing you say to someone.
So stupid.
So I said, I don't know how to entertain you. I don't know what makes you laugh. But I reckon you probably like penis jokes.
Huh?
And the guy laughed. And I said, and I'm sure that you have, you've got a good sense of humor, but you really don't seem like you do. If someone met you, they'd think you were very serious. And they just, they grimaced. And then the third person said to me, can you do an accent? So I said, sure, what accent do you want? And I did a couple of accents and they laughed at that. And then they said, okay, what do you know about music? So I said, I know quite a bit about music.
More than the top 30 chart.
And then they gave me some weird assignment. They were like, well, if you had to interview the Beatles, what would you ask them? And I can't even remember what my answer was. But they seemed to find me entertaining enough to give me the job.
Ah.
So I got it. That was the only time I did radio interviews. After that, I really just met with people who, I suppose, knew what to look for. And if these guys that you're meeting with today, Tembi, are any good, they'll know when they see you and when they hear you whether they want you or not. If it's a job being a DJ, I don't know that there's much future in that. I don't think you could be a DJ for very much longer. That is absolutely not an important job. And you'll be paid terrifically poor money for that job. Rightly so. I mean, you it's 36 minutes after 7. Here's a song from Justin Bieber. It's called That Power.
Tim, you just sound really old and philosophical. The best thing to do in life is try to find a solution to people's problems. That's what the best careers are made out of. So radio is not a solution to anyone's problems, really.
Yeah, but don't put Tembi off.
No, I'm not putting her off.
Good luck.
I'm not putting her off, but within your dream, I'm not saying don't do this. Within your dream, look at us.
Tembi, you're a moron if you're asking us for advice, frankly. You shouldn't be asking us for advice. Right, Ben?
Sure.
Tembi, I say just put your favorite outfit on and enjoy it.
Tembi, ask someone who's intelligent. You're asking the wrong people.
You enjoy radio, go out there and just show your passion.
Get a real job.
No,
all right, Robin, get Robin Sher in here. I'm going to speak to Robin. I've missed Robin. She's been to Europe. She's been doing interesting things. She's been buying stuff at all the big garden shows in Europe. And she's here this morning to talk to us about our Fynbos. Ben, do you have any Fynbos?
Not yet, Gareth. No.
Are you keen?
It's on, yeah.
You are?
I like Fynbos.
You like Proteas?
I like how it smells in the summer.
Okay. You see, you grew up in the Cape. You know these things.
I grew up in the Cape, yeah.
That's right. Hey, Robin, how are you?
Good morning, Gareth. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
How was Europe?
It was amazing. How was Europe for you?
Fantastic. How was it? How was Europe for everybody? Oh, shit, not everybody went.
I know, shame.
Ben just gave me the filthiest look across the table. He's like, oh, yeah, let's talk about Europe. Let's go. So what did you go for?
Go ahead, Braggy McBrag Pants.
Yeah, she brought it up. Robin, it's Robin's, you fight with her, don't fight with me.
Next time he must take Robin. You, Ben.
Okay, so Robin.
I want to go anywhere with him.
You and Ben obviously got the memo for dressing in greens and khakis this morning.
Oh, yeah, we're matching today.
Yes, very good.
Very cute. We should take a selfie.
All right, we'll do that afterwards. But you went to Europe. What did you do there?
So we actually went for the largest garden fair in the world. We were in Cologne for that. And in addition to that, we also visited the Gardena factory. So we were very privileged to be taken around.
They're the guys who make all those fittings for the taps and the hose pipes and the various things in the garden.
Yes.
And they make the tools.
They make garden tools, very good quality, all irrigation, hose pipes, everything you need. And yeah, we were very lucky to go. We went to the injection molding facility. We watched a bit of their logistics. We saw quality control. How do they test all their products to determine 25-year warranty and all that they
all
have?
This bragging is making Ben crazy. He wants to go to the injection molding facility.
Sure.
Yes, it was incredible. So we saw how they make the blades for secateurs, all the processes that go into that, the quality of their materials. It was absolutely phenomenal.
But these guys are like the best in the world when it comes to that stuff.
Yes, yes, they are. In Europe, they are a name. Everyone knows Gardena. They want them. And even in South Africa, they're really building a good name. And their products are such good quality that you actually can't really compare. Yeah,
you guys stock a lot of their stuff at Lifestyle, right?
Yes, so we've recently put in a store-in-store where we actually have their entire range available in South Africa and quite a few products exclusive to us alone. So if you're looking for the best quality tools and Gardena products, any hose pipes or fittings, then yeah, you can find it in our new beautiful store-in-store in our Mica area.
Very nice. All right, so you're back here now and you're going to give us a little masterclass in Fynbos.
Yes.
So first of all,
correct.
I always thought that this stuff has to grow wild. It's very complicated. It needs a certain climate. You can't just grow it in Gauteng. It's going to die. Is that wrong?
So that is wrong, but it is a very common perception. And you are right. They are a bit more difficult to grow than other types of plants. So people struggle with them generally, but it doesn't mean that you have to struggle with them. It's just because they have a bit of an unusual care needs than a lot of other plants.
What are they very finicky? Do they need a certain amount of water? I mean, what's the problem with this Fynbos? Why is it so complex?
So actually, it needs a bit of tough love. So you actually need to have a bit of restraint with Fynbos. As you say, it grows wild and you don't think it should be in your garden. So it actually prefers that type of environment where people don't give it too much attention.
All right.
Quite unusual about it is that you should not add compost or bone meal when you plant it. It actually thrives in nutrient-poor soil.
Well, the Cape.
Yes, exactly. So it prefers very well-draining, more sandy soil.
Yes.
So obviously that's the type of environment that you have to create, and that's quite unusual in people's gardens, and I think that's why people don't always have as much success with them. But if you know this little fact, don't add compost, don't add fertilizer, and definitely don't add bone meal. Try create a sandy environment. If you're going to plant it into a pot or even into the ground, put stones at the bottom and rather use a more sandy soil, and you'll probably have great success with it.
Right. So I'm half tempted to do this because there is some beautiful stuff there.
Yes.
So fynbos is, let's just be clear about that too, because it's a complicated thing to explain. It's a family of plants. There isn't a fynbos plant. There's this whole family, this huge family of plants. They're very specific. They're endemic to the Western Cape in South Africa. They don't occur in other parts of the world, right?
That's right.
So yes. It's a uniquely South African kind of family of plants.
So they are indigenous. So essentially they should survive better in our environment. But obviously the Western Cape is better for them. But you can definitely grow them in the Highveld. Even proteas and pincushions, they occur in the Highveld by themselves anyway. Huh. So people often don't know that, but they definitely can thrive here. The very interesting thing about them is that they one of only six floral kingdoms. So Gareth, you said that it's a big family of plants. So the fynbos is actually a floral kingdom, and it's the most biodiverse plant habitat in the world. Wow. That is located in only one country.
That's incredible.
So obviously
we should be very proud of this.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's also the reason why so many people love fynbos and want to plant it in their garden, because it's so unique, so beautiful, so unusual compared to everything else. People really love to plant them, but then often they don't have success because of its unusual needs and obviously the type of environment that it thrives in.
So is it easy to obtain?
Yes, absolutely. We sell one of the largest varieties of fynbos in Gauteng. So we actually source ours from the Cape, and we get everything. So we even get white proteas that you can plant in your garden. We have over 10 different types of pincushions. You know those beautiful ones? They look very funny because they look like a pincushion. You know, you put your pins in if you do sewing. They're beautiful.
Of course, when
bright
I do sewing,
orange.
Yeah.
Yes, Gareth, yes.
I do a lot of sewing. I've got a little heart-shaped pincushion.
Did you Google it, Nasir?
Yes, I now know what you're talking about.
Yes, so I'm sure you've seen them. They're absolutely beautiful, especially in a winter garden. They add that bright color. So we have various types of proteas, of the pincushions. You get the cerurias, which is the blushing bride. A lot of people love that. Absolutely beautiful, dainty flower. Ericas, the leucodendron, which are beautiful colored leaves. They can be like dark purple, reds, absolutely beautiful in any garden. And obviously we get them in winter, and we still have right through summer, we have an entire range of fynbos. So they're very easy to obtain, and they are very easy to grow if you just follow a few simple guidelines and obviously understand that they enjoy a bit of a different environment to the other plants in your garden.
Very good.
Yes, so the only very important thing to note is that they do need to be watered quite a lot when you initially plant them. Because of the type of soil that they enjoy, you actually need to water them at least twice a week, with a few of them, some of them every single day when you first plant them. And only about 2 years after you've planted it, when they're well established, are they then more water wise? Because obviously they are considered to be water wise, but it just takes a bit of time for it to get established in your garden. So you do have to put a bit of care into them and understand
it's
that.
Like a human baby, you've got to really be very attentive for the first little while, and then you let them go wild.
Yes, exactly. Right? Exactly, Gareth.
Right. Okay, well, this is very handy. I didn't even know you could grow this stuff. I thought it's very finicky. It can only grow in those mountains in the Western Cape. Turns out you can actually buy the stuff at Lifestyle and you can grow it yourself. Make it a little challenging for yourself in case you feel bored by the stuff that's easy to grow.
Yes, exactly, Gareth. And they are just magnificent in a garden.
Yeah, and very South African.
Exactly.
You can have an element of that floral kingdom which is missing from your garden. Plus, who doesn't love a beautiful protea?
Yes, exactly. And also they make for great cut flowers. And the more you prune them, the better they grow. Pruning is very important with fynbos. So cutting off and obviously in their dormant stage, pruning them, that will help them to grow fuller and bushier and to obviously produce more blooms. So they're beautiful. Grow your own in your garden and then cut them and put them in your house in a vase even. You have the best of both.
All right, very good. Just by the way, last time you were here, we made a little video, and you brought a spray along.
Yes.
This spray, you clean the leaves of the plants with this spray? Just explain what it is, because I didn't know about this, and I felt like I needed to buy some for my plants inside.
So the spray that I bought is a leaf shine, and it helps to just clean the dust off your indoor plant leaves.
Did you know this, Ben?
Yeah, Gareth, I've been very aware of this and how important it is.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're paying attention.
Really?
Ben has a leaf spray. I don't.
Well, yeah, so, it's a leaf. Like, it's you know your face. You can't just leave it.
You know how your pot plants get, they get a bit dusty? You know how they
especially
look at
this time of year.
They look a bit dusty, yeah. And they get that the leaves look dull. Mm. Plants unhappy.
Yes, and also when you water them, they often get water marks from if you spray or mist them, or if you water with a watering can. So that leaf shine also just helps to remove those marks and the dust.
So that's useful to have.
It's like a little bronzer.
Well,
some eyeshadow.
Think about it. Exactly. You put the plants in your house to look nice. If they look shit,
exactly.
You know?
Good point.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
You want them to look great, so you get this leaf spray and then you spray it on. It's almost like you know in the kitchen with spray and cook?
Spray and cook, or like hairspray?
Like hairspray.
Yes,
yeah, hairspray.
There
we go.
That's
like hairspray.
Holds everything in place,
right.
Gives you a little shine.
Gives those leaves new life.
Exactly.
It looks like a brand new plant. Because it must affect the plant if it's all dusty. It can't do as much of the conversion of sunlight into energy, right?
Exactly. And obviously, if the leaves are covered in dust, then it can't take up the nutrients
right.
And sunlight, like you say, the moisture in the air, all right. That type of thing. So it's very important to keep them clean. We also recommend that people, even if you don't want to use a leaf shine, you can just wipe with a damp cloth, wipe the leaves of your indoor plants, just to, obviously,
right.
Like you say, Gareth, keep those leaves clean so they can do their job.
Very good. Okay, well, that's a lot to deal with this week, and I think we will we'll see you again next week.
Yes,
for
thank
more.
You.
Lifestyle Home and Garden can be found on the corner of Esterhout and Beyers Noordir. It's in Randburg. You can go and see them. They're very easy to find. They will look after you. They've got this enormous selection. It really is enormous. Are we going to talk about bonsai at some point?
Yes, we are, Gareth.
I know that's something people are interested in.
You're very lucky today because I've actually brought you a bonsai.
Ooh.
It's a late birthday gift. And I thought that if you guys enjoy the bonsai, you can deal with it a little bit, enjoy it, see how it is to look after it.
You've got to give me very careful instructions.
Yes. And then I will come in and I'll tell you all about how to keep your bonsai going and what are all the tips with bonsais.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited about that. I do love bonsais. They look beautiful. And now I'm going to have to look after it and hopefully I'll do a good job of that. I'd hate to have bad news for you in 6 months' time.
Yes, Gareth, I would not enjoy that. I've
no.
been coming in for a while, and I hope that you have learned a lot from
me.
Well,
you know what, Robin, if I haven't, you'd better deal with me. Have you ever seen Walking Dead? There's that baseball bat with a wire around it.
Oh, wow.
Bring that in.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
All right, let's get into the unnews for this morning, and then we will meet our guest in a moment or two, an award-winning director and a movie called Mayfair, which we'll talk about. That's coming up just now. Belgium has pledged 30 million euros to help South Africa with land reform. Isn't that nice, the Belgians? The ANC duly accepted the money with great enthusiasm and thanked the country for their contribution. Nothing helps land reform quite like new cars, shopping trips to Dubai, and bottle service in the hottest clubs in South Africa. Speaking of the ANC, they naturally don't want to acknowledge that a meeting took place behind the scenes to oust President Cyril Ramaphosa, but they also don't want to give people the impression they don't know what's happening with their members. Zizi Kodwa eventually played it down the middle and said white monopoly capital is causing divisions in the party, but the strength of the party will not be compromised. Blah, blah, blah. And the All Blacks are doing what they can to try and talk up this weekend's clash against the Springboks. Though the Bucks have no chance of coming within 30 points of the world champs, coach Steve Hansen says he's very wary of the wounded Bucks. He then said his time as a policeman made him very sympathetic to members of society who live without hope. So he's only reverting to his training and saying what he has. All right. We'll speak to you in the next couple of minutes. You can get hold of us on 0861-555-189. And you know how to do it on WhatsApp and all the other ways. Get on it. Let's hear what you're up to. CliffCentral.com.